division of Salem.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple hours, if you want to, we'll talk about cars. We can talk about your car. We can talk about oil changes, tires. There's just lots of stuff we can talk about. One of the things that I do on a regular basis is I hang out at some of these automotive forums. And like the other day, I was looking at a motorhome forum, and everybody had a different idea on when to change the tires. Everybody had a different idea on what brand was the very best. Some of them said you mix the front and you mix the back. And we're talking about motorhomes, 2, 4, 6, 8, with 10 tires on them. So it's a two-axle in the back with duals on both sides. So as I'm looking through all of this, I'm pretty confused. I think when you get into that confusion mode, hopefully you have a shop that you love and a shop you've patronized for a long time. I think the answer for this geographical area, Phoenix, I think the answer for Arizona and Phoenix is go to your shop that you've patronized for a long time and ask them what they would do. Perhaps talk to the owner, perhaps talk to his wife, whatever. The fact of the matter is that you're best guided by somebody who's known you for many, many years. And so there's just lots of misconceptions out there about, well, motorhome tires have to be replaced at 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. Everybody's pretty much between 5 and 7 years. Passenger car tires and light truck tires are 10 years. So that creates a problem all of its own, but why are motorhome this and, you know, one-ton trucks hauling horses are this? Well, the answer has to do with the load and the temperature and how often they're used. So a motorhome could sit for 30 days or 45 days or 60 days. It's going to have a little bit flat spots on the tires, but those are going to wear off very quickly. Those are going to resolve themselves very quickly. So I don't know that I agree with the 3 to 5 year mark. I'm closer to the 7,000 mile mark, 70,000 mile mark. I'm perfectly fine with 7 years on a motorhome tire. And if you do 10,000 miles a year, that's 70,000 miles. But the years is what makes a difference to me. I don't really care how long you drive it or how long it sits or whatever, because at least in Arizona, we're all playing with the same weather. We're all playing with the same temperatures and the asphalt temperature and so forth and so on. What's really important on tires is to understand that when you put them on and you spin them at 70, 80 miles an hour, they're going to get a little bit hotter. We need a tire that's not going to explode because of centrifugal force. And frankly, there's very few of those that will. Those that will are oftentimes priced half as much as the tires you bought last year. So there are a lot of cheap tires out there, and those are tires that I'm not necessarily an advocate of, but on the other hand, if it was a 235-75-15, which is a large passenger car or light truck tire, and it was dirt cheap and I was hauling bales of hay, I might very well take it because the risk is small. The worst that's going to happen, I'm going to blow a tire and have to put a spare on. So that's kind of what I think about, but as far as my customers are concerned, with passenger car tires, we don't like to see them go past 10. We start notification processes at 8 to 10, 8, 9, and 10 areas, and that's what it's really all about. Oil changes, my goodness, oil changes, they just goes crazy. But you know what, I got Richard hanging, and I'm going to go to Richard. Thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yes, I'm having electrical issues with my wife's car. It's a 2013 Chevy Cruze.
Okay.
We replaced the battery, and the new battery died out. So we're actually on our third battery right now.
Yeah.
And keeps shorting out the battery.
Okay. Well, this isn't really anything that's difficult, but you don't have the right equipment to do it. This is something, I'll tell you how most all the shops I do, we have inductive amp probes. So we're going to take this big pair of pliers that's got a big loop in the middle of it, and we're going to wrap it around all the cables on the positive or all the cables on the negative. I don't care which end you use. And then we're going to look at the amp draw. And the amp draw should be 0.3, 0.4, which is what we call keep alive memory for the computers, keep alive memory on your seat settings and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to draw a quarter or a third of an amp all the time to keep the clocks working, keep the memory alive, all that kind of jazz. So in your particular case, obviously, you've got a draw. So the question is where's the draw? So I hook my amp meter to either all the positive or all the negatives, and I've got this draw of 20 amps or 30 amps, and so I just start disconnecting things. I disconnect, one of the first things I would disconnect would be the alternator, because that's a common problem. So I would disconnect the alternator, and there's a, on the back of it, there's going to be a big red wire. And if you're going to take that off, make sure you don't short it to ground. And if you take that off and the draw goes away and you hook it back to the alternator and the draw comes back, and I'm talking about a 15 or 20 or 30 amp draw, then the alternator's bad. But if that's not it, then you open up the, you go out to the trunk, and that's something else you should do now is grab one of the neighborhood kids, put him in the trunk, shut the lid, and ask him if the light goes off. Because trunk lights
well,
do that.
The back seat drops down, so I did check that.
Okay. Alrighty, so you've just got a whole bunch of places to go, and you're going to track them. Now, using an inductive amp probe, I can just follow to where the wire goes. So I have this big harness, and then all of a sudden the harness splits into three, and so I grab harness one, harness two, and harness three. Oh, the draw's in number two. Okay, so then I follow that, and I just keep checking the wires until I get to where I'm going. So you might pay a couple $100 for that service, but it's a couple $100 to find it, and usually it's pretty doggone cheap to fix it. Is there any possible way at any other time that somebody put the battery in backwards? Had a little spark here and there?
I don't believe so.
Okay. And you check the trunk light, and it's not on. The dome light's not on. And there's nothing on the dashboard that indicates an issue. There's no lights that didn't used to be there. There's no check engine light, none of that.
Well, there was an engine light, and it kept flashing stable link or Stabilitrack and power steering. I read that there was a battery, a negative battery cable issue on that model, so I replaced that, but
okay.
I haven't had an opportunity to hook the battery back up because it's dead after I replaced that cable.
Okay. Wow. You know, I don't think you can draw lots of conclusions the way you're doing it. The only conclusion we can draw is you got to draw. You know, that's all there is to it. But where it's at and where it's going and what's going on is completely different. And so somebody's going to have to track that down. And on a 1 to 10 scale for us gray-haired guys, that's about a number 6 if you have the right equipment. So
do you have a place you can recommend on the west side?
Tell me where your major cross streets.
91st and Cactus in Peoria.
Okay. I have Auto Dynamics, and that's at Grand Avenue. And hang on a minute, because I have that here in front of me. Auto Dynamics, been around since 99th Grand Avenue, north side of Grand and 99th Avenue. This is what I would suggest you do. I would suggest that you call them up and you say, I got this year making model car, and I put a new battery in it, and it's dead, and it's done that a couple of times. So are you capable of tracking down the short? You don't tell them where it's at. You don't tell them what the guy on the Internet said. You don't tell them what the neighbor said. You don't tell them what Mark Salem said. But you can say, can you explain to me the process, perhaps, just so I can understand it? And if they say, yeah, we use an inductive amp probe, and we just follow it all the way where the draw's at. And in reality, that's what we can do. We can literally take a big harness, and we've got the draw in the harness, and there's 10 wires. Pretty soon, two of them are going to branch off, and we'll check those two, and they're not it. They're not the draw. You just keep moving down the line. Then pretty soon, one drops off over here. You put your inductive amp probe, and that's not it. But it's still in the main trunk, and you just follow, follow, follow. And so this is likely to be something that's going to cost a lot of money to find it and nothing to fix it. That's typically what happens. Now, how about downtown? Anybody downtown? Do you work downtown? Any other place that you have?
No, I work right in this area. And
okay. Okay.
I'm going to have to get it towed, so preferably not the downtown.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's fine. There's other shops that are but your Sun City's kind of quiet for me because I don't have I have a lot of applicants, but I don't have a lot that I've vetted and that I'm comfortable with. Auto Dynamics, I've known Chuck for 100 years. So I'm sending you to him because I know he's honest and dependable. And if they say they're going to fix it and then they don't fix it, then Chuck will get involved and you'll be made whole again. So I do know that that he's that kind of a guy, but that's what I would do. On a 1 to 10 scale, this isn't a big deal except for you. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever had any smoke when you connected a battery cable or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Have you ever had any sparks when you connected a cable, whether it's positive or negative, or when you took the battery in and out, or when you put the new battery in or out? Have you had anything?
No.
Okay.
I haven't seen, like, big flashes, but I can hear kind of, you know, staticky.
Okay. No big flashes, no melting of the terminal, no sparks that are obvious, none of that.
No.
Okay. Well, this could be a burnt fuse link, and there is a couple of fuse links, and you can go check the fuse links, but you're going to have to know where they're at, and we're going to have to look in a book and find out. The fuse link typically will shut down some portion of the car, and the fuse link is the short wire about 5-6 inches long that's designed to fray, to burn, to disconnect that circuit when it sees a big draw, sees a big amp draw. So this could be as easily as in the time you put this battery in, and it wouldn't be the first time. My guys, not too long ago, one of my senior guys, put a battery in and hooked the positive to the negative and the negative to the positive. Just he just did. And it happens to the best of us. So it's not a matter of whether you're a man or a mouse. It has nothing to do with that. It just happens to do with you made a mistake. So you might want to look at fuse links, and they're usually close to the battery. And what you do is you find the wire that comes off the battery terminal, and you just tug on both ends of it. And if the rubber insulation stretches, and then you put it back together and it stretches, but then any other wire doesn't stretch, that means the fuse link is blown. And then you're still going to have to figure out why, but that's going to be the fix. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Good
luck.
Thank you very
much. You bet. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines open. If you'd like to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join us, if you have a car question, if you have a car argument in your family, or you want to talk about my wife wants this car and I like this car, and you're buying something new and you want me to comment about the mechanical stability of the car or the longevity of the car, the repair of the car, then I can usually compare two cars for you. Whether you take my advice or not, it doesn't make any difference, but it is a neutral point of view because I don't have a dog in the fight. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. That's the phone number, and the lines are wide open, and there's 5 of them. Gil answers the phone, and he says, would you like to talk to Mark? You say yes, and he says, what's your name? And then he whispers in my ear, Greg wants to talk to you, or Ron wants to talk to you. That's kind of how it works, but you don't see the behind the scenes. Action Auto Repairs up at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. He's a very gentle guy. He's very nice. He's very polite. He's a heck of a fisherman. And he knows right from wrong, and he's a good technician himself. And so those are the kind of people that can usually control a shop of macho guys. And that's the hairy-chested guys that have been working on cars for a long time. There's nothing wrong with that because we all grew up in that era. We all grew up that way. But it's really important to have a shop owner that knows a lot about cars, so when he's fed a line of worm droppings, the shop owner knows that that's not true, that's not the case, and the shop owner has enough sense to say, let's get a second pair of eyes in here, I'll have a pair of eyes, let's get John over here, and then now Don, and we'll all take a look at it and see how if we can come up with something better, or if you're correct. That's kind of how it works. So shop owners always have that dichotomy of trying to balance the technician's needs to the customer's needs to the parts department needs to the service rider needs. All that's going on in the background. But most shops, independent shops, are small enough to where everybody's pulling on the same end of the rope. And that's because all of those positions are typically handled by the guy that owns it or the family that owns it. So there's a big difference there because it's put together really well, and there's no dichotomy where people have different agendas and different things to do and different wants and needs and all that kind of stuff. So there's a place in our industry for all kinds of car repair. The chain stores, the tire-only stores, the alignment-only stores, the air conditioning stores, the transmission stores, the general repair stores like mine is. But we don't overhaul transmissions. We typically buy one that's been overhauled and install it in the car, because the technical skill necessary to overhaul a transmission on a day like today or the decade we're living in is something very, very special. And it would probably take any one of us at my shop, and we're all master technicians, any one of us probably 4 or 5 months of school to be able to understand the fundamentals, but we still couldn't overhaul all automatics because you got Chevy, Ford, and Dodge, Hyundai, Honda, and every other brand that they're out there. You have all of those guys along with you. So, and each and every one of those is different. But we have somebody on the line. Who might that be, Gil?
Say good morning to Bob.
Bob, good morning.
Bob? What do you think about a Tahoe?
Okay.
That diesel, you know, that little diesel engine that Chevy. If someone was buying a vehicle just not to pull a trailer, but, I mean, just to drive, because as it gets a little better mileage, and I just like to have a diesel just to have it.
Okay.
What do you think?
What year are you talking about?
A new one, to get a new Tahoe.
Okay. Well, I think the new, my wife just bought a Jeep with a 2.3 liter diesel in it. It's a Jeep truck, the new Gladiator. And she's getting, I don't know, 18, 19 miles to the gallon between Payson and Tempe. And sometimes she's loaded, sometimes she's not. And if she's not loaded, she gets another mile or two a gallon. There's nothing on the ground. It has plenty of power. It starts right up. The diesels of today, what you're talking about, the new GM and then the new diesel for Jeep, those might as well be, you know, spaceships that go to Mars and have lunch and come back compared to the cars we were all grown up on. So I don't have any problem with the General Motors, and I certainly don't have any problem with any of their diesels. They came out with I think it was a 6.6 at the very beginning, which was their V8 diesel, and everybody else had six cylinders. And that 6.6 today is still good, and the Allison transmission behind it is still good. So General Motors has not necessarily hit a home run like Dodge has, but they're in second place. So I would shop price and warranty and bells and whistles, and I wouldn't have any problem if my son bought one or my daughter's husband bought one. I'd have no problem with that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. The diesels have come a long way, by the way. The diesels used to be oil-leaking black engines with a lot of soot, and they weren't really dependable, and sometimes you could jump them and sometimes you couldn't. None of that applies to today. On my Dodge diesel truck that's a 2012, I have 174,000 miles on it. It still doesn't leak a drop of oil. Now, I've been pretty good on my oil changes, between 10 and 15,000 miles. I'm changing the oil. And why is it 10 to 15? Well, I'm up north with the horses sometimes, and I'm down in Tempe sometimes. So if I'm in Tempe, I can get my oil changes done right then and there. But if I'm up here in Pace, I'm going to be up here for a week or two, then I might have some time on it. But the idea is that good maintenance, and every motor and every transmission we replace, virtually everyone has been abused by the driver. So the engine's been overheated, the transmission's been overworked. Very few of them that we see die of old age, but that's true. That's at least a third of them. They die of simply old age. We got a caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to Jim.
Jim, good morning.
Good morning, sir. I just want your opinion on an engine.
Okay.
My sister-in-law is buying a Mercedes-Benz, about a 20-foot motorhome with a 3.0 turbocharged diesel engine in it. I just your opinion on that engine.
Well, it's going to be a small V6, I'm thinking, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Don't even think about the diesels in the 90s and the 80s and the 70s and the 60s, because we've moved so far forward. The diesels of today are sipping fuel. They have tremendous power. The turbos last forever. And the only time and I'm talking about all diesels, and I'm including your Benz. Only time we ever look at those and haven't to fix anything is when the driver got stupid. That's all.
Okay. Well, this has got 44,000 miles on it, so.
That's nothing. That's not even twice around the girth of the earth. It's not been around the equator twice.
That's exactly what I told her, too.
And there's a, You know, I would. It's called a used car checkover. I'd have somebody look at it. Usually, you pay somewhere between $50 and $125. They're going to look at the tires, mm-hmm. the brakes. They're going to look at the suspension, the tire wear. They're going to look at all the fluids. They're going to look underneath the hood. They're going to run a Carfax on it if you don't already ran a Carfax on it. So they're going to look it over, and they're going to have the opportunity to say these are issues it needs. But when you're talking about 30,000-40,000 miles, there's not a whole lot that car could need.
Right. Okay. So, talking to another person who owns a diesel shop here in Surprise, mm-hmm. he says the engine is solid. That is a solid engine, not this particular one. But he said the only thing that might fail on you is the emission systems.
Okay. And that's across the board. Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Honda, Toyota, everybody. Everybody. Mm-hmm. We're having a tough time getting the emissions clean. We want to, right. The feds want us to wrap our lips around the tailpipe and be able to breathe the exhaust for a week and a half and be fine at the end of a week and a half. So we have DEF problems, we have catalytic converter problems, and we have DPF. Sometimes my mouth gets so far ahead. We have different filters, and we're lighting those up with DEF, and so when the soot comes out of the motor, we're cooking the soot and we're turning it into a dust. And then we send it out the tailpipe. All of that is true. But to be honest, and that is a big part of my business, but most of the time the big part of my diesel business is dressing them up, tires and wheels and lifting them low, and we do lots of trucks and stuff like that. Very rarely do we work on a Mercedes-Benz underneath the hood unless it's filters, fluids, and stuff like that. We'll be back.
All about that.
Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. And hey, Jim, if you're still there, I called a friend of mine who's a Mercedes-Benz guru, and I asked him to call the show and talk to us about that 3-liter diesel on that Benz 20-foot motorhome. And the questions I'm going to ask him are pretty simple. What do people do wrong, and is there any pattern failures? And those two answers will answer all the questions we need, but Goody's been a friend of mine for a long time, and I lean on him for Mercedes-Benz issues, and so I ask him to call. But if he doesn't call in, then Jim, my email address is mark@marksalem.com, and you can send me an email, and then I'll put you and Goody together, and he can spend a few minutes with you with respect to that. Action Auto's I-17 in Deer Valley, I've known Tom since 1983. He knows right from wrong. He's an ASE master, so are his technicians. And he has a circle right around the I-17 in Deer Valley. And it's difficult to find good shops, folks. Trust me, I've been doing this for 25 years. But it's easy to keep them once you found them. So Tom's a good guy, and you won't have any problems there. So if you live near I-17 and Deer Valley, then Action Auto's a good shop. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you. I'm sorry you're going to be going off the air soon.
Yeah, I am. I think the 26th is my last show, which is not next week, but the week after.
Yep. So I have a question, and we're going to stick with the diesel, the 3.0, the Jeep diesel. I was driving back from Las Cruces yesterday, towing Jeep Wrangler, towing a side-by-side. It may or may not have been 500 pounds weight, but when I was coming over the Continental Divide, what I noticed was all of a sudden I got all kinds of warnings on my dashboard. It was the axle fault and the locker fault light came on, and the locker lights came on. They were flashing. And I noticed my temperature was about 1.5 ticks over the middle of the thermostat, high. Usually it's about a half below the middle of the 50% range.
Okay.
I pulled it over, let it sit for a while, restarted, it was fine. Came on about 10 minutes later, it was fine. And then as long as I kept it at about 64, 65 miles an hour and not 70, the heat would stay down and the lock warnings did not come on. Do you know what was going on there? Do you know anything about that?
Never heard of that before. I don't have a clue. But tell me about the heat. Let's talk about the heat. Give me a number on the heat. Is it 180, 220, 240, 250, 260? Where is that?
I'm sorry because I could have switched to a different reading, but it was just looking at there's a thermometer, the bar that's going up, and the dead center spot from 0 to, let's say, 0 to 100, it was at 50. It usually runs about 45, And I'm just saying a percentage-wise of the bar going up.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay, no, that's okay, because if you've got some kind of a graduated thermostat, so to speak, and you're hanging around halfway, you're perfectly fine. Every car in the world, three quarters, pay attention, and when we start flirting with red and we get towards the very 100, then you're in big trouble. So 50% of your gauge is fine. Keep in mind that in the old days we had 160 thermostats, and a lot of people took them out and they ran their car somewhere between 140 and 160. We also know that the water didn't boil out of the engine oil, because it takes 212 to do that. So we had a bunch of sludge problems, but they blamed it on the Pennzoil. And the Pennzoil comes from Pennsylvania, and that oil always sludges up. Today we know that's fabricated bull excrement. We know all of that is a lie. So we want the temperature in your Jeep to run about 220, because water boils at 212. Not all the time. But water boils at 212, and every time you shut your car off, we develop 1 or 2 tablespoons of water as the hot air inside the engine condenses. And so we need to get the water out. But if you just get out there and work it, you're fine. So I don't think your temperature is going to have anything to do with this. I don't think. Now, we have scanners. We're going to plug it into your Jeep or your Dodge or whatever. It was a Jeep. We're going to plug it into your Jeep, and we're going to look at the codes, and we're going to look at some of the history. And that will tell us what to do forward. But that's all I mean, you didn't see any smoke. You didn't pop any thermostats. We didn't dump any coolant on the ground. There was no oil on the ground. It ran normal with the exception of the lights in the dashboard.
Yeah, I mean, but the temperature did creep up to about 70-75% of that thermostat.
Okay.
When I had to pull it, when all the lights were going off, and then I had to let that cool down and to get it. So when I went back down from 72 to like 63, 64, the lights went off, and the thermostat, you could watch it actually just drop down below 50%, just below.
Okay. The only thing I'd do if I were you is just let it cool off, squeeze the upper hose, make sure it's nice and soft, and then take the radiator cap. Take the radiator cap off step by step. Push down and click once and wiggle the cap, and there's no pressure and stuff, and then go ahead and look at it. And then the overflow, if it's got coolant in the overflow, it should be full. The radiator should be full. But if the radiator's full and there is no coolant in the overflow, then you should probably bring that up to the add mark or something like that. But it didn't ping, so if it's overheating, it'll start pinging on you real bad. You'll have all kinds of bells and whistles, and they'll all be red on your dashboard. That means shut her down, buddy, shut her down. We're in dire straits here. None of that happened to you. So I don't know what happened. I suspect that this is going to be something somebody can track forward. And one of the first places I would probably look at is I'd look at the VIN number on the Internet and see if there's any technical service bulletins with symptoms that match yours. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. All the 5 lines are open, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. It's called ATE, Automatic Transmission Exchange, and he's been in the Valley since 1968, and Phil and his staff are transmission diagnostic experts. Transmission repairs, replacements, they do all kinds of transmissions, and they do import and foreign as well. It's always a good idea to get a second opinion from someone who wants to replace your $4,000 transmission, and may I suggest that Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, would be a good place if you're faced with that dilemma. Phil's been around a very long time. He's very good at what he does. And for those of us that understand and can talk the lingo with him, more than half the time he can guide you to the repair or the diagnosis over the phone. But he's not going to do that for you. He's going to do it for us other shop owners, like we help him with air conditioning systems. So again, Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, ATE. Brian, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I'm sorry to hear you going off the air. I thought it was going to be a month later, but hopefully they'll get another adequate car guy.
Sure.
On the radio, it's beyond our control, we know. I've got an 18 Colorado with a V6, and a month ago I was headed for the coast, and I got, on the way, I lost trip A on my display on the dash, and I also lost the digital readout for the speedometer. And let's see my notes here. Oh, and the cruise control. I lost the cruise control. And then I noticed the other day when I opened the door, and I don't have the rheostat working to turn the dome lights on. So I'm just wondering if it could be a fuse block or something all connecting these three that is causing this, or if I got a major dash problem, it'd be expensive. And I just wanted to mention this. It is going in Wednesday to Joey over at Thompson's.
Okay.
So I got to find out about this, but
okay.
Kind of annoying not having the cruise control, especially.
No, that's right. I'm quite sure that the process is the first thing they're going to do is pull out their 12-volt ice pick light, and they're going to go over to the fuse panel. There's probably two, so they're going to have to know where they're at, and they already do. And then they're going to turn on everything. They're going to turn on the wipers and the headlights, and they're going to play with the window motors. Now, the window motors are going to be on a circuit breaker, and they're not going to be on a fuse. And a circuit breaker, because we want the circuit breaker to cool off if somebody's head is in the window, we need to be able to count to five and let the circuit breaker reset and drop the window so they don't die that way. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to go on, and you certainly have a problem that is widespread. But Thompson's can handle this for you. It's just tell him what you told me. But they're going to take that little ice pick. One end goes to ground, and they're going to turn the key on, and they're just going to hit both sides of the fuses. And they go. The light goes on, off. Whoo! Number 17's blown. Open up the manual on the car. Number 17's blown, and number 17 handles the following circuits in the car. There'll be three or four circuits. So then at that point, he's going to put in an amp meter, and instead of putting another fuse in and popping it, he's going to stick it what we call a loop, and he's going to say, I want to see if it'll pop it again, or he might put another fuse in and just waste 35 cents. But at the end of the day, he's going to look at all the things that fuse drives, and he's going to have to figure out which one of those caused that fuse to burn. Mm-hmm. And it sounds a lot worse than it really is.
Okay, so you think it's, well, we don't know for sure, but it's probably more likely it's something in the fact of a fuse or that situation more than the whole dashboard situation electronically messed up.
No, you can't. You're jumping five or six levels right off the ground floor.
Yeah.
And so we got to walk before we run, and then run before we, scream and run fast. But you're going to check the electrical system. He's going to check the alternator, and he's going to make sure that the voltage is somewhere between 12.8 and 13.8, maybe low 14s.
Yep.
He's going to look for the amp to be 10 to 30. He's going to turn on the headlights and see if they go dim when he goes to idle, and if they get bright when the RPMs are up. These are the different electrical things that we're going to do, but we're also going to look at the computer, and there's a good chance he's going to see something deep within the bowels of the computer that the guys at Checker can't see, and he'll be able to go in there and look and say, oh, this is a problem. Now, there's a couple of dashboard companies here in town that really do good work. So if you do have that, you got two choices. Pull the dash pad, send it, or just send the whole car. And most of us are going to send the whole car.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, that's one would be Dick Speedotac, I think, huh?
Yeah. I don't know if he's doing digital dashes. There's one on McKellips and Hayden. And Russ was trained by the old Dick up on Indian School, and I think 15th Avenue, 15th Street, 17th
Street.
Yeah,
I remember that place.
Yeah. And so Russ is a disciple of Dick's up there. So those are two places, but you could go to them. You call them and say, will you handle my digital dash issue? You can go to them, and they're certainly capable of traveling that through. But it might take them, they may get to a point where they can't go into the engine wheel, they can't go into the computer, and that's something the mechanical guys will do. But you could go there first if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think I'll start with Tom for me before, and I really appreciate everything, Mark.
Okay, well, good luck to you, Brian. Thank you very much. Thank you. Steve, you're up next.
I had a quick question about the CVT transmissions. The manual says, don't roll with them in neutral, it'll mess up the transmission, could cause a lot of damage. Is that because people might be going 60, put it in neutral, then that little band go down, then they jam it back in gear when they're going high? Or I'm just thinking, if I know I'm going to be coming to a stop, if I put it in neutral, would that be fine? Or do you know what the parameters might be on what would cause the damage?
I'm not real good with automatic transmissions, but I'll tell you what I think it is. we need to pump fluid through a transmission, and we do that when the engine's running, and we do that when the transmission's running too. So if you turn the key off and you're driving down the road and you're in neutral, we still need to lube a portion of that transmission because the axle, the drive axles are going inside of it, and there's a ring and pinion inside of there. So we still need oil. So I'm not quite sure.
Let me change that just to put it in neutral, not turn the car off, but just put it in neutral.
And they say not to do that.
Yeah, they said don't put it in neutral when you know.
Okay, well, who said that? Does it say that in your manual, or are you talking to somebody else?
Manual.
Okay. All right, I'm
just thinking that the little belt that goes up and down the little splines, maybe when it's in neutral, and they might think people, like I say, going 60, then put it back in gear, and it might wick it that way. But if I'm engine's on, neutral, and I know I'm coming to a stop, you know, I just got to get that last 200% of the mileage out of the gear.
Okay. Well, that's not normal. You're deviating from normal. The car was built around normal people and normal actions, so shifting it into neutral has never been a good idea, no matter what power plant you have underneath the hood. So if you have a diesel, if you have a gas, if you have a propane-powered, if you have a supercharged, there's no benefit to shifting it into neutral. All you're doing is wearing out the shift linkage. So just leave it.
I'm just thinking like if you have a manual, you know how you know you're coming to a red light, you just put it neutral and close.
Okay, and then when you put it into neutral and you come to a stop, we still got spinning gears, and you clutch it and you put it in first gear, and as you go from first gear, it clunks and goes into first gear. But it won't do that if you just slow down and use the synchronizers and put it in first gear and you come to a stop. So you're trying to talk me into doing something I don't do. I don't suggest people do that. I don't suggest people throw their transmissions, automatic transmissions, and I don't care what car it's in, because there's no benefit to it. There's nothing to gain. So you can put it into neutral if you want, coast up, when the light turns green, put it in drive and pull forward. You can do that. There's no gain. There's just no gain. Anyway, Steve, good luck to you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and who's next?
Say hello to Jack.
Jack, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Hey, I need your guidance. I've got this 2000 F-150 with a V6 in it, and it keeps having misfire problems on cylinders. And real quickly, a couple of years ago, fixed it. A year ago, one of them cracked, replaced it, fixed it. 2 months ago, replaced two more, and now it's got two more misfires on a couple other cylinders. I'm sort of at wit's end. I've taken it to multiple shops to look at. So what thoughts do you have what might be going on?
Well, none of us are going to know what the future has to hold. At first blush, and give me the window for all of these. Is it 8 months? Is it a year and a half? Is it 2 years, start to finish, on all these codes and all these injector problems?
About 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, we went to a real good shop that we found, and they replaced all of them. They used remanufactured, and within about 10 months, one of those cracked, and we took it back to them, and they swapped it out for us. And
okay, that doesn't make any difference to me. And this is a gas motor or a diesel motor?
It's a gas. Okay. It's a 4.2 V6. So.
Here's the deal. All of us make the same mistake. We go in and we do a cylinder drop test, and that cylinder's bad, so we replace the injector. Never mind that 4 feet away, that injector plugs into the ECM, and the ground side of it's bad. It's got a bad connection there. And so sometimes we'll be smart enough to go in there and disconnect and connect, disconnect and connect, disconnect and connect, put a little dielectric in there, do the same thing, and we're exercising that male and female connection. And then all of a sudden everything is fine. So I don't know if everybody's just going off the code. Number six cylinder. I don't know if they're just doing that or if they're actually going in and trying to diagnose it. But replacing injector after injector after injector is kind of a waste of time, especially if there's no drivability problems. So the computer's lost sight of the injector, or it's trying to tell the injector to do something and it's not seeing the tailpipe response. But there's all these moving parts here. So, what part of town do you live in?
Well, I'm in New Mexico.
Oh, okay. All right. I think what I would do is I'd call a couple local parts stores and tell them you've got the 2000 F-150 V6 and ask them who buys parts and doesn't return them. Ask who's been in the business a long time. Ask where all the gray-haired smart guys are at. And I make that with a funny face when I say that. I think you talk to the auto parts guys and who, more than anything else, who buys the parts and keeps them. Because a lot of auto parts store are going to say, nah, Salem, he buys an alternator, then he returns it, and that didn't fix the problem. And so all he's doing is swapping parts out. Now, they've never said that about me. I'm just using that as a verbal example. So.
I appreciate that. Let me ask you another quick question. So one of the times the shop said, well, you know, you need a new wiring harness because all the little clips got broken. So they put a new wiring harness in. Turns out it was just pigtails, and they put butt splices on there and just crimped them. So what's your experience with those sitting on top of an engine? Are they good? Are they okay?
We use butt splices all the time. Yeah, I mean, there's
fine.
From an 18 gauge to a 10 gauge, heavy electrical, a ground circuit. Yeah. If we find a bad connection and we grab the harness and we lift up on it and all of a sudden something happens on our scanner and we push down on it and something happens, we're going to open up that particular area of the harness. We're going to look and see what's going on. If we have a bad connection, we cut the connection out, bring those two wires together. Now, some of us will just bring them together, overlap them, twist them together, solder them, put some heat shrink on it, and be done with it. Some of us will do that. There's nothing wrong with the crimps. There's nothing wrong with using dielectric, and there's nothing wrong with taping them up. That's it. Those are industry acceptable standards. But I'm bothered like you are. Oh, you need a harness. Oh, we still got the same problem. There's a problem there.
Yeah, and it's different shops because the truck's in different places, and so I'm sort of at wit's end. But I really like your idea. Just I find the ECM and I can remove the connector and put it in and out a few times and clean it up maybe.
Don't bend any pins, but yes, you're going to have to learn how to disconnect the connectors. You're going to pull them out. You're going to dust them off with a little bit of air maybe, dust off the ECM males and then the females in the wire harness. Then you're going to put a thin film of dielectric grease across the female part of the connection. And then you're going to slide it on ever so, and slide it on, slide it off, a little bit left, a little bit right. Do that a bunch of times, and then that's as good as you're going to get.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Okay. All right. Good luck to you, Jack. Thank you very much. And we've got open lines available. I'm going to take a break here in 30 seconds. But 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have 5 open lines available, and you're welcome to grab one. We're going to be here for another hour talking about cars, and you're always welcome to be hang out with us and do that. My name's Mark Salem. We're here on Saturdays from 10 o'clock till noon talking about car repair problems. Just give me the year, make, and model, and let's talk about the symptoms. That's the easiest way to do it. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're here for another hour talking about car repair issues. My shop said this. I was told that. My husband wants to do this. This is what I want to do. All those kinds of Dr. Ruth questions I can help you with. If you'll correctly tell me both sides of the issue, which is something that sometimes doesn't always happen. 602-508-0960. Our lines are wide open. We have 5 of them. So if you have a car question, then feel free to grab a hold of one of those lines. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is run by a guy named Nate. And Nate and I are really good friends. But I don't tell you about him because we're good friends. I tell you about him because he's in North Phoenix area, and he knows as much about diesels as any man I've ever met in my life, and he probably knows more about diesels than I do. Nate does the GM, the Ford, and the Dodge diesels. Anything from a complete overhaul to tracking down some kind of a misfire problem, he's really good at what he does. He has great staff. And they don't mess around. So they're located on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak in North Phoenix, just right off the side. He sells parts 24 hours a day at their website, and you can get a lot of information on their website, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. So Nate's a good guy. He knows what he's doing. And folks, when we're running across a car that has an intermittent problem, or we're running across a car that did something really funky but then hasn't done it since, the chances of us fixing that are really slim and none. What you don't want to get into is the guy says, I want to do a full analysis of your car from taillights to headlight, and it's going to be about $1,100, or it's going to be $500, or $400, or $600, whatever. Then what's your success rate on that? How often does that happen? Because really and truly, if you were going to do that, wiggling wires and wiggling connections is probably where you're going to find a lot of your problems. Can you imagine wiggling every electrical connection in a car today? Can you imagine that? And while you're wiggling it, you have to have somebody on the other end of that circuit verifying that that connection is solid and that it's not going with the wiggle. So you wiggle it and it goes on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off, and you pull on it and it's on. You push on it, it's on, but if you wiggle it, it goes on and off. Well, you found your problem. You just got to go find out where in that wire it is. There's a lot of times that we look at the code, and the code will send us, but the code just tells us the problems in Arizona. We need to know the street, the address, the zip code. We need to know the city, the county. We need to know where to go look. Those of us that have sophisticated equipment, we'll gather that information up, and we'll narrow it down. So if we have a misfire, is it compression? Is one of the valves dancing? Is it spark? Are we having a tough time with the coil or a spark plug wire or the spark plug? Or are we having a trouble with a lean condition or a rich condition? Both cause a misfire. So, you know, we had a truck in the other day that driver said, you know, I brought this from my boss and he said you guys can fix it. And I said, well, what's the matter with it? I don't know. Well, we need to start there, buddy. So the staff calls the store owner, the business owner, and he says, just, you know, intermittently it dies and stalls. Okay, well, what's been done to it? Everything. Well, when it dies and stalls, how long does it take to start up? Sometimes 2 minutes, sometimes 2 hours. How many people have worked on it? Just about everybody. Okay, has the fuel pump been done? Yes, and I'm thinking to myself, that's fuel related. Has the fuel pressure regulator been done? Yes. Okay. Has the gas gauge work? Yes. Okay. Let's do this. How about the ignition system? Does it ever have a misfire code? No. Okay. So there's no misfire codes. There's no check engine lights. Nothing like that at all. No. When you turn the key on, does the check engine light illuminate? I don't know. Well, it's got to illuminate. That's called a bulb check. When you turn the key to the on position, the check engine light should come on and go off 5-6 seconds later. That's just a bulb check. You're supposed to pay attention to those lights. So it depends. You know, junk in is junk out. There's lots of times that the shop's going to say to somebody, you got to wait till it gets worse and easier to find. That's all there is to it. The symptoms are weak. The time frame is weak. And we have to determine if it's spark, fuel, compression, electrical, ECM, electronic control module, or the environment. We had a car in one time that the customer said, I want you to verify a concern. Okay. And then they tell us the concern and the repair. And I said, no, I'm not going to play this game. Tell me exactly what's going on, and I'll do what I can for you. Well, we've had this problem with the ECM, and this company fixed it. And they charge us like $850. Okay, what's the problem? Well, we want you to verify that's going to fix it. I'm not going to do that. Just drive it. If it's the problem's fixed, then it's fixed. And the only person that can say it's fixed or still broken is you. I can't go over and look at it. I don't know what symptoms you had. I don't know what your talk was. I don't know any of that kind of stuff. But the proof of the pudding is just go drive the doggone thing. Does it still have the bad habits it had? In this particular case, evidently there was a windshield leak, and the windshield leak leaked water on top of the ECM, the electronic control module. The harness was plugged into the top of it, so we filled that area with water. Then we got corrosion. The shop finally dropped the ECM, saw the corrosion, saw the windshield leak, cleaned up all the connections, and charged the guy, I think, $800. That didn't include the windshield. He said, go get a new windshield put in this. I've already cleaned up the damage. Well, he doesn't want to put a new windshield in it. He wants somebody to verify the problem's gone. Well, I say, you're the best guy for that. Just drive it. Just drive it for a week or a month. Just drive it. Try to keep it out of the car washes. Try to keep it out of the rain. So he does finally do that, and everything is fine. He's a little concerned about the price. I'm not. I'm not at all. They fixed a problem nobody else could. and they used really industry standards to attack the problem. First of all, let's try to identify, is it a bad connection? Is it fuel pressure? Is it ignition? Is it a camshaft sensor? Is it a crankshaft sensor? Because all your problems are going to into three categories. It's going to be fuel, spark, or ancillary stuff. Crankshaft sensors, timing sensors, knock sensors, fuel injectors, fuel pressure regulators, all that kind of stuff. But they're all part and parcel of the three systems. So that's kind of how it works. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Let me tell you about Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Nate up there at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Roads, he's a good guy. And so if you need any diesel work, he's one of two shops in the town that I talk about, and I talk about a lot. There's another shop in town, Blackwell Auto. He's at 40th and Greenway, and he does a good job. He does old cars. He does the antique. He does the vintage cars, but he also does motorhomes and mom and dad's cars and daughter's cars and husband's cars, all that kind of stuff. Blackwell is a wide-open platform. So he does the old cars, and he does the new cars, and he does a good job of both of them. The problem with all of us right now is this. We're all swamped. So it's not uncommon for somebody to call in at my shop or Blackwell shop or Strictly Diesel shop or Automatic Transmission, all of us saying, you know what, we're out 20 days. I'll put you in line. You have to be here when I give you your appointment, and we will look at your car. But I can't promise you I'm going to get to it before. I want you to drop it off 2 days before. So if I can get it, I will get it. But that's all we can offer. I don't know why. I can't tell you why, but I don't know how many times a week I hear, we are just swamped. And I know for us, we're bidding 2 and 3 weeks out. Now, if you need maintenance, we'll do your 2 and 3 weeks out. If your car's broken down, we'll take you and put you in line. But we're looking at the stack of papers, and we got 11 cars in here that are dead in the water, and you want yours moved to the front of the line. We just can't do that. We just can't do that. We have to take everybody in order. And unfortunately, that's the way most of us feel. There's other people that will let you buy your way to the front of the line, but I don't know that that's a good idea. Kurt's Auto Repair is another one, I-17 and Bell Road. Gas and diesel, Eric and Kurt are a pair that just really bounce off one another fine. They both bring certain skills to the table. They're both very wide open to discussions, and they can fix cars when nobody else can. They're a go-to shop for me there at I-17 and Bell because they're challenged by those things that on Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock, the radio changes channels 10 times. And I use that facetiously. But that's a problem that very few of us have ever seen. Most of us would never even try to fix that. But when you get to those kinds of situations, then Kurtz is a really good guy to do that. So we're going to take a break. The phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, the easy way to do it is give us a call, 602-508-0960. Every Saturday, for the next couple of weeks anyway, I'm going to be here talking about car repair, but you're also welcome to send me an email. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. Salem is spelled like the cigarette. Mark is spelled with a K. So it's mark@marksalem.com. Give me year, make, and model and miles, and then tell me, you know, in general terms, what's going on. I'm not interested in what Google said. I'm not interested in what your neighbor said. I'm not interested in what your guess is. I'm not interested in discussing all the possibilities. I'm just going to try to put you on the path. So if you have something that sounds like a fuel problem, I'm going to tell you, let's go get a fuel pressure gauge. Let's attach it to your fuel pressure regulator or to one of the fittings on the rail. Let's run it through the hood crack and let's tape the fuel pressure gauge right to the windshield. Now you notice when I turn the key on, it goes straight to 40 pounds. I want it to always be at 40 pounds when it's running. Always. And so the customer says, you know what, driving down the road, everything's fine. 7 days into it, everything's fine. Driving down the road, and all of a sudden, the car dies, but before it dies, the needle falls to zero. Okay, we have a power problem. Because the car runs fine, it's not that the fuel pump's bad. We have a delivery problem, electrical. So we're missing the ground or the power. So we start looking it up, and it's got a relay, a fuel pump relay. The fuel pump relay is underneath the dash. So we go and we see the fuel pump relay, and there's a windshield wiper relay, and they're both the same. So we switch them. The problem goes away. That's not fixed.
1 minute.
We need to go in and replace that relay. We just use the windshield wiper relay, and we swap them. And that fixed the problem. Could it have been a bad connection? Yes. But we're only talking about a relay. So if you want me to put the old ones back in, I'll put the old ones back in, but I think that's a bad idea. That's how it works. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. If you have a car question or a car problem or an argument in your family or you don't know what kind of oil to use, and oil is probably one of those things that I deal with every day of my life, oil. And there's so many wives' tales about conventional oil, semi-synthetic oil, synthetic oil, when to change them, who makes them, are they worth their money, all that kind of stuff. That just dominates my life sometimes. Anyway, if you have a car question or a car problem, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696, 888-960-9696. And you'll get to Gil, and he'll answer the phone. He'll say, do you want to talk to Mark? And you say yes. He'll ask you your name. And then he's going to say, give me a snapshot of what you're talking about. And you say, I got a check engine light, or my car won't start, or something like that. So he'll cue me on that when he gives me the information. When we talk about car, I'll get to that caller in just a second. Car, when we talk about shops in town in Phoenix that have been around a long time, I don't know if anybody's been around more than Larry Harker's Auto Repair. They've been in Phoenix since 1967. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto because Bob worked for Larry's Harker's Auto and he took over. Ellen, his wife, handles the front counter, and she's probably one of the few ladies I know that really knows cars. And here's why. She gets to hear the symptoms, then she sees the work order for the repair. She puts one and one equals two. So she sees this symptom over and over again. She sees the same repair over and over again. One and one equals two. So it's a great place, and especially if you've got a problem with your gasoline car that nobody else can fix. Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. I'm really proud to have them on our repair shop list. Let's go to the phones, and who might be waiting, Gil?
Say good morning to John.
John, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I have a question for you. I've been wondering for a while. I have a high-performance car, and you guys actually installed a supercharger for me.
Okay.
And Alan did an excellent job. And he was telling me that, and the manufacturer said to use at least a minimum 91 octane.
Okay.
Which is all we have out here, unless you go to, you know, out by the racetrack. With that being said, and in other states that have 93 octane or whatnot, what's the deal with octane boosters? Does that do anything?
Yeah, it does. It does. Let's talk about octane first, though. Okay, octane is the amount of the explosion, the time of the explosion. That's what octane is. So here's regular. It's got a low octane number. Here it is. And this is silly, and people laugh at me when I do this, but this is the explosion from regular gasoline. Boom. That's it. Just boom. Now, if we go to super unleaded, in an exaggerated way, it's this. Boom. It's longer. We're talking a millisecond of time, 2 or 3 milliseconds of time. So you're not going to have, like, breaking a twig, boom. That's regular gas. One molecule ignites 1,000, and 1,000 ignite 1,000,000. So the explosion is very fast, the burn is very fast, and we're done. But on the other hand, with a higher octane, and even if you get into the 93s and 95s, in an exaggerated way, one ignites, one molecule ignites 2, 2 ignite 4, 4 ignite 6, 6 ignites 8, and so forth and so on. So the burn is longer. The push on the piston is longer, but don't forget, we're talking about a millionth of a second here. So if you think that you're going to give it super and it's going to love you and last forever, that's not a good idea. Because I've seen gray-haired guys and guys my age bring their trucks and cars in with blowers on them, and the motors just scattered. And they thought, well, it's no big deal to run it up to 1,300, 1,400, 1,500 degrees exhaust temperature. Oh, yes, it is. Aluminum melts at 1,100. So it's really stupid to get up there in the 15, 16 range. And I'll tell you something else. If you want to really try my hypothesis out, Next time you're around a pump like that that's got a wide variety, have your wife or girlfriend, preferably not both, have them put fuel in it and not tell you what they put in it. And I'll bet you can't tell the difference.
Okay, thank you. Mark, is that a bad idea to have both of them in the car then?
You know, that's even a worse idea. that's a real bad idea.
Okay, just wondering.
You know, I don't know if Alan told you, what kind of car did we put the blower in?
It was a Challenger's, the 6.4.
Okay. We bought 4, 5, 6 of the 2010 Camaros when they first came out with the 6-liter, the big V8. And we put blowers on every single one of that. And I'm proud to tell you that Alan installed the blowers and set them up with a lot of help from other guys. We never had one pop. We never had one total destruction of the engine. But those things had acceleration that was just unbelievable. Just unbelievable. Now, we still have one of those Camaros. We got an orange one. And it's got supercharger, you know, sticker on the cowl. But that thing is just a rocket ship on wheels. So, folks, the supercharger, what it does is this. A normal engine aspirates air by sucking. It goes, and then we squirt some fuel in your lungs, and then we spark the spark plug. There's an explosion, and then the exhaust valve opens up, and we send the exhaust out the tailpipe. So it's a four-stroke motor. So we have suction, where we suck the gas in. Then we have power, well, we have ignition, and then we have power, and then we have exhaust. Well, a supercharger, instead of the motor just sucking air in, we put an air hose in your mouth. So I'm going to say, I want you just to inhale like this. And I'm going to put an air hose in your mouth. And when I hear you start inhaling, I'm going to pull the lever on the air hose. And I'm going to fill your lungs up with air really quick. Now, this is a bad idea. You could kill someone. I'm just doing this because we can't be on TV. We're on radio, and I have to talk this and explain it to you. So a supercharger packs the air in. Then we got the injector that squirts the fuel in. And right now we have a charge that nobody else has. We've got a bunch of air and a bunch of fuel, and it's all pressurized, ready to explode. And when it does, it's a boom that's a lot louder than a Camaro without a blower on it or a supercharger. So if you already know, John, what the difference was before and after the blower, right?
Yeah, about 40 to 45% difference.
Yeah, and if you want to smoke, if you were in the proper arena and you wanted to smoke the back tires completely off, you could do that.
Oh, easy.
Yeah, so that's what it's all
but
about.
Also, Mark, I wanted to tell you, I know you're getting off, you're going to be ending your show soon. I want to tell you that I actually live in East Mesa, almost to the Apache Junction border.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose you guys now because of the, I knew that it would be done right. And I have no problem.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. You know, you've met Andy, my daughter, and you've met Alan, my son. And Andy runs Alan. Because Alan is like his mother. He's ornery. And Alan handles all the diesels, all the high performance, all the modifications. He does tires and wheels and lift kits and exhaust and all kinds of stuff that's legal. And Andy runs the shop, and she pays the bills and stuff. And we have a parts department. But to answer your question, and thank you for your compliment, Renee and I have made sure everybody there understands we all know right from wrong. So if you do something wrong, just tell us and we'll fix it. And if we don't know what we're doing, we're not going to charge you for telling you we don't know what we're doing. So we know the difference between right and wrong, and we've been around since 1979. So there's a lot of shops that have come and gone in the time between 1979 and 2023. So thank you for your kind words. I've already marked it down on that it was in the tape in the vicinity of 103.14 through 19, and I'll copy that for Andy and Alan. But thank you for your kind words. Thank you very much. All righty, 602-508-0960. We have open lines available. We have 5 of them. Gil's going to answer, and he's going to say, do you want to talk to Mark? And you say, yeah. 602-508-0960. We can talk about anything. We can talk about different oils. We can talk about coolants, the different colors. We can talk about emissions testing and what they're really doing. These are things that I get a lot of calls and emails on, and they're pretty popular. So if you have a question about that, then give us a call. The phone number here on the radio is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be here for another half an hour, and if you need to ask a question, now's the time. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 35 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We have open lines available if you have a car question. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And I've got two callers. So that means I have three open lines. You can grab one. Let's go to Harold first. Harold, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. For the last few weeks, you've told us all that you have a Jeep product now in your family, and I have been driving Jeep products for over 20 years, and I've been happy with them. My question to you is why does the car literature consistently rate Jeep products at the very bottom of the list for reliability and maintainability?
And that's the fallacy of those kinds of lists and those kinds of surveys. And, you know, there's some very expensive cars that are really good quality cars that are at the bottom of the list because the people that buy them expect perfection and expect a car to perform as they think it should. And when it hiccups or blows gas once every 6 months, then it's no good. It's not a good car. I can't really explain it. You know, there's a lot of people that have very expensive cars that just love them. There's a lot of people who have very old cars that just love them, and everybody in between. And when you start asking people, what do you like or don't like about something, if I really like it, I'm not likely to take the time to tell you how much I love my new Jeep. But if I hated my new Jeep, or I feel like that you took advantage of me at the dealership, or if I didn't like the tires that you said you were going to put on it for me, then I would give you a bad rating. But other than that, I can't really explain it. I want to tell you that in the 70s, Jeeps were hard to keep on the road. But so was every other American car in the Dodge, the Ford, and the Chevy. And we were in a transition period there when we were going from carburetor to fuel injection. We were going from points and condensers to electronic ignition. We were going with EGR valves and all of a sudden air pumps. We were doing all kinds of stuff to cars. Our industry just couldn't keep up. So, yes, they get done. But right now, I'm a member of quite a few Jeep forums, and I did buy a Jeep. My wife bought for herself a Jeep Gladiator pickup. The Gladiator means pickup. And she got the diesel engine in it, and she just constantly throws it in my face when we're driving her Jeep. First of all, I don't get to drive it. I get to sit on the passenger side. But her fuel economy, average fuel economy on her dash is better than mine on my Dodge truck. And so she's always rubbing that in, and I say to her, I'm hauling horses that this thing couldn't haul. I'm going places fast that this can't. And she just shakes her head and ignores me and continues on. So I like Jeeps. I especially like the new Jeep diesel. I think her average fuel economy on her dashboard 6 miles per gallon better than my Dodge pickup truck. But her Jeep won't haul 4 horses or 5 horses or 6 horses from Payson, you know, from Tempe up to Payson. It'll do it at probably 25 miles an hour, and I can do it at 70. So there is a difference.
Are you saying basically that the reliability and maintainability Jeep product is equivalent to anything else on the market?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, okay. I'll only comment about that further. I think a lot of what happens on the Jeeps is I think you'll agree, tell me if you do or not, that there's a lot of hairy-chested guys that own Jeeps.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. There's very few women that own Jeeps. So what happens is the Jeep comes in, and the owner tells us about a problem. And when we open the hood, everything from California to Maine, everything from Washington State to Miami has been replaced. Everything. Every electrical component, everything that moves or acts or participates in the performance of that engine is brand new. And he says, this is what it's doing, you need to find it and fix it. Well, when we do fix it, it's the Jeep's fault, it's not his fault. He misdiagnosed it. He threw a whole bunch of parts at it. He didn't complete the job. It was on a 1 to 10 scale, it was a 4 for us. So we fixed it, but he's not going to tell everybody that Salem fixed his Jeep, you know, for real cheap after he spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars and hours and hours and hours of his own time and his own money trying to fix a problem that he never even got close to. So there is a minority of customers that deal with us in that fashion. We're perfectly happy to work with them. We're perfectly happy, but it's up to us to get the information out of their mouth and out of their head. That's the shop's job. You can't just come in and dance the keys across the counter and say it doesn't run well and walk out, because we're going to throw your keys. Well, not really. We're going to run out and hand you your keys and say, if that's all you're going to give us, we're going to give you your keys back. We need dialogue. We need to talk. But in the 70s, the Jeeps were kind of tough. The wiring wasn't that great. The six-cylinder wasn't that great. The transmission wasn't that tough. But the Jeeps of today with fuel injection are fine pieces of equipment. Got to take a break, and the line is open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil tells me all five are open if you want to talk. Well, welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We got about another 17 minutes or so of show. If you have a car question, you've got time to hop in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to go to Dave. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Yeah, I have my daily driver is an older car. It's got 165,000 miles on it, a Scion TC. And it burns a little oil in between the 5,000 miles of doing an oil change. I add a quart of oil pretty regularly. Is that okay? Is it the additives that are breaking down with the oil? And it doesn't seem to have a leak at all. Thank you.
No. It's what it's doing, it's consuming oil inside. At 160,000 miles, you've been around the equator six times. You've stopped and started that car thousands of times. It's gone through thousands and thousands of heat cycles. So the valve guides are going to start rubbing a little thin. The valve guide seals are going to get hard. The rings are going to lose some of their tension because we have a compression ring and a wipe dry ring that cleans the cylinder wall off. And so we have all these moving parts, and that's really nothing at 165,000 miles. You add a quart every now and then. That's nothing that would concern me. But let me ask you this. Are you using a conventional oil or a synthetic oil?
I'm using synthetic 5W30 when I add it about 2,000 or 3,000 miles after the oil change. And then I can usually get the rest of the way to the 5,000 to get my oil change done then.
Okay. I wouldn't do it if I were you that way. First of all, a 530 synthetic can go 10 to 15,000 miles. So you're buying an oil, but you're only using it for a third of its life, or less than that, 25% of its life. I don't think you're going to get a big advantageous giveaway here by using a synthetic in a car with 160,000 miles on it. Now, admittedly, I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but I have 170,000 a mile on my diesel, and it holds, I don't know, 12, 15 quarts of oil. I think I have a cooler on it, and I'm using a synthetic on it. But I run it hard. I put it away wet. It's hauling horses and trailers and tractors and dirt and all kinds of stuff. So mine's going through a little bit more than yours is. I think if I were you, is I'd go to a straight 30 weight and still change it every 3 or 5,000 miles. And I think your oil consumption problem, I think we'll directly affect it in a good way. Your motor's loose already. We don't need to worry about starting that thing up on a cold morning and letting it idle till we get the peanut or the thin oil, you know, in all the joints. You got plenty of slop in that motor. So I think if you'll just change the oil to a straight 30 weight, don't use a synthetic, a straight 30 weight. And what were you doing on the synthetic, a 5,000-mile oil change?
Yeah, I typically take it to somebody. They'll do it all for $16, so you can't beat that price.
A synthetic oil change?
Or it's an oil. I think he charges me $20 extra for synthetic.
Okay, I was going to say, the oil costs me more than that.
The conventional, for sure. And, thank you.
It's just change it and try it my way. Because, first of all, the engine doesn't have a brain. Well, it has a brain for spark and fuel, but it doesn't have a brain to say, wait a minute, Dave, you just gave me some regular conventional oil, and I was used to that synthetic heroin oil that makes everything better, and your car loves you, and the engine will last forever. All of that is bull. The fact of the matter is that just about every motor we replace has been damaged by the nut that had his hands on the steering wheel, and every single one of those was an overheat, and he thought he could make it home, or she thought she could make it home. And that's how we replace motors, is almost always those are the circumstances. But in your particular case, you're probably not leaking any oil, but you got a motor that's been around the equator six times. So why don't we just thicken up the oil a little bit and see if we can control that? And if we can, then let's leave it alone. It's not going to clatter in the morning because the motor has so many miles on it. So we're not going to have the lifters dry. We're not going to have any clatter associated with the valve train. So I think you should just try it my way. Now, I'm an oil expert. I'm telling you, you can go conventional, then you can go semi-synthetic, then you can go synthetic, then you can go to Wesson oil, then you can go to Crisco, and you can bounce around all those oils any way you want. The engine doesn't have a brain, and it doesn't know what liquid you're pouring in the crankcase. So don't let anybody tell you that once you start synthetic, you have to stay there, and once you start with conventional, you can't go to synthetic, you can't bounce back and forth, because all of that is a lie.
I appreciate the advice, sir, and I appreciate the service you've done to the community over the years.
Well, thank you for
really
that.
Love this show. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. As it stands right now, my last show will be the 26th, but if I'm asked to do another show so they can fill the position behind me, my intention is, and I've told management I would do that. But right now, the 26th is my last show. Folks, I've been doing this since 1988. It's time for me to take a break. I haven't had a Saturday off in a long time, so I'm going to go grab a horse and disappear in the mountains. Anyway, who's the next caller?
Say hello to Charlie.
Charlie, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Hey, I got a weird question for you. I've got a 95 F250 with the turbo diesel.
Okay.
And I want to find out what it might be, what I might be able to sell it for. It's got 388 on it. Two-wheel drive. Body's almost perfect. It got, anyway, it's in great shape. You got any idea what I might get out of it?
I know who to call.
Okay.
I want you to call. Have you got a pencil handy? I'm going to give you a phone number.
Yeah.
It's 480-598. No, 598.
598-1234. 1234, okay.
And then you're going to ask for Alan.
Alan.
And then you're going to say, I got this 95 F250 diesel with 160 or 180 or whatever you had on the clock, and your dad said that you could give me the low and the high I should sell it for, and then you're going to describe the truck. On a 1 to 10 scale, this truck has been put away wet most of its life. So on a 1 to 10 scale with respect to the bed and the interior and the engine compartment, on a 1 to 10 scale, we might be a 3, or we might be an 8, or we might be a 9. You fill in the blanks. But he'll have a good idea of, we work on diesels a lot, and we see them come and go and so forth and so on. So he just bought a diesel from one of our customers. And we see a lot of diesels come through that are, I want to buy this. It's a, what we call a pre-purchase inspection. I want to buy this, but I want you to look it over. So we do lots of that kind of stuff. But Alan, my son, is the guy you need to talk to. I can't help you.
Well, appreciate the referral. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It's, we have another caller, and I'll take it.
Say good morning to Dan.
Okay. Dan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good today. I'm north of the dirt, and I'm not wearing any handcuffs.
Same. So I just picked the absolutely right time to call you. Automotive teacher, an auto shop teacher in high school.
You were?
And I am. I currently am.
Okay.
Actually, you had come out. I teach in Buckeye, and you had been one of our guest speakers, 30-plus years ago.
Yep.
And used to also be a guest speaker for the Outstanding Senior Auto Awards Banquet that used to be held years ago, and I listened to you and took some students there. Anyway, wanted to say thank you for what you do. I have used your shop as an example of a very trustworthy business and what kind of success you can expect if you work hard and are honest with people rather than trying to take them for every little nickel and dime that you can and only see them once and then get a poor reputation. So anyway, I wanted to say thank you for all that, and I didn't realize that you were actually leaving the airwaves. So I timed my call perfectly.
Well, and let me just tell you, most of our success is because of people who guided us. When we first started doing radio in 1988, Jim Tazarek over at KTAR called me in his office, and he said, let me tell you something, kid. Jim Tazarek used to be a policeman in St. Louis. He had a head like a basketball. He was built like a brick house, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. He looked me in the eye and he says, if you think you're going to thump your chest and tell everybody that your shop's the greatest shop in the whole wide world, you're not going to last long. Do we understand one another? I said, yes, sir. So I've never said the name of my shop since 1988 unless I'm pushed to it, and every once in a while I do. So mm-hmm. The idea is that it was never about my shop. He said, you have to make it about my collar. You have to guide mm-hmm. my caller. You cannot say that you're going to send everybody that calls you to your shop. You say, where do you live? And you better find a good shop to send them to. So Jim Tazarek, who has since passed, he was the one that kind of molded. And if you remember back then, Rosie was on that station as well. And so yes. Rosie did home and remodeling, and Mark did cars. And we are still the best of friends. So we have a lot to be thankful for, but he made it clear that if I was going to stump my chest and tell everybody my shop's the only one in town that can fix their cars, I wasn't going to last long. Today, we have guys in Arizona that do that, and they don't last long. They just don't last yep. long because it's self-serving. It's, you can't see me, but you can hear me. My shop is the best shop in the whole wide world, and you need to come to me. And that's exactly, and so when I came to KKNT, I had a meeting with the management, and they said, what makes you different? And I said, I'm not going to do a two-hour commercial about my shop. That's all there is to it. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to put the callers first, and I'll have no second. And so we've been very successful, and I have been involved in our industry, and I do love talking to the seniors at the high schools. Hopefully I can talk them into coming into our trade. So you've nailed it. We've done a good job, but we haven't done it all alone. We've done it because of the guidance of guys like Jim Tazarek and a lot of other guys that guided us. Michael Dixon, Preston Westmoreland, all those guys back then were mentors of us, and so we learned from them. But thank you for noticing.
Oh, you bet. And congratulations on your retirement. I'm getting close to that as well.
Well, good. So, I hope yours turns out good. I'm even hoping mine turns out good, because the variable here is the old lady. You know what I mean? Because are we going to be able to put up with one another instead of just a couple in the morning and a couple in the evening? And so
I understand that.
Yeah, and she's actually she doesn't work on cars, and she has really pretty fingernails, and mine are kind of stubby, and there's grease underneath most of mine, and most people look at the two of us as Jack the Ripper and Snow White. And so those are the names that my wife and I have adopted because if the kids needed spanked, I did it, and if the kids needed a hug, she did it. And we've been married, come February, be 50 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah, and so we have three wonderful kids, and we have four or five grandkids. I always mess that up, and she'll be mad at me for saying that. But yeah, we've done well accidentally. And I'll tell you the end of the story. The end of the story is without me ever saying the name of my shop, we have 1.9 new customers walk in our shop a day. Now, it's not hard to track me down, but I wasn't out there thumping my chest either. And then that puts a little pressure on staff because everybody's got to hit a home run. Everybody's got to do what they promised to do. Everybody has to find, identify, bid, and repair the problem that the customer came in for. And frankly, remember that Snow White and Jack the Ripper analysis I gave mm-hmm. you? There's a couple of guys that have worked for me, and there's a couple of guys that still work for me that they like the Jack the Ripper better than anything else. it's no different than you in high school. You've got a group of young men there, and there's going to be some that are going to be good, some that you'd let date your daughter, and then there's going to be a few over here in the corner that are probably like a Mark Salem, that have horns grown out of their head underneath their baseball hats and haven't learned to be a gentleman or a straight-up guy. And so you've got that difference in your auto shop, just like Ben Elkins had it in mine in 1970 in Tempe High School.
Mm. You know, I still use your example of when you would bring people in for an interview as a possible tech, and you'd take them around the shop, and as I recall the story, you always had one guy, one plant, who would throw a piece of trash at the trash can and miss on purpose. And your test was if the potential employee would go over there, pick it up, and throw it away.
I'd walk him right over the top of that. I would
and
walk
I used that
1 minute.
I use that in class all the time.
I
do it, and then I talk about it.
I learned that from Ben Elkins, and it was just initiative. I think you'll agree, we're just testing initiative. So as I walk this young man, young woman around the shop and introduce him to the different players and stuff like that, I afford him the opportunity to bend over and pick up that towel and throw it in the trash. I need initiative. I want somebody who's a team player. I don't want somebody to look at, now sometimes we had guys that came through that we might have had 400 wadded up towels on the floor, and they didn't pick up one of them. So yes, you've made my day. Thank you very much for calling. Thank you, Dan, very much. Anyway, my email is mark@marksalem.com. If you have a car question or a complaint or anything like that, that's the place to deal it out, mark@marksalem.com. I'll see you next Saturday here at 10 o'clock on KKNT, and we'll talk about cars again, and then one more week after that.